Hey guys, welcome to the TardyCast. So happy you are joining us again. Just so you know, if you don't know, we do these once a week for parents and for leaders to just kind of frame something that will help you in your parenting of students, because we believe every parent wants to be a better parent, and to help leaders as you work with these great parents, kids, and as you as a leader, as you're developing and growing and helping give kids exactly what they need, and as you partner back with parents and being able to kind of do it all together is a lot of fun. We got so much great feedback from last week's. We had Buddy Mendez, and we were talking about grief, and we decided to just take it one step further because I think there's so much to unearth on the topic of grief, and as you're dealing with students, there's so much to unearth that we wanted to give just another cut at it that would have some more practical principles, some practical ideas. So I'm here. I'm with Jack West. He is our pastor of care and recovery here. Is that your title? Is that the accurate?
That's the official title.
That's the official on the business card.
Right.
Pastor of care and recovery.
Yes.
You're from Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You have been here at Mariners for how long?
Over 2 years.
Oh, my God.
Almost 2.5 years.
And you love California.
I love California.
People in California love California. I'm from New York, Missouri, and
It's the best coast.
It really is. The West Coast is the best coast. And you, you know a lot about this. So for parents who are, you know, I go to Jack mm-hmm. constantly. How often do you think I bother?
About once a week.
Once a week. And it's because you're just so good at this. Like we have a conversation with a student or a leader has something that comes up with a student or a parent does. We don't have to just guess at what to do as pastors. I think a lot of the pastor side of things we can do in mm-hmm. junior high or, you know, high school and student ministry as well. But, you know, when it comes to the kind of those extra layers that, you know, we just don't know. We just don't have mm-hmm. experience with. We're able to come to you and you just have a wealth of experience that we can kind of tap, you know, grab from and you know, mooch off your time to help us. And I'm so grateful for that. And thanks for doing this with us.
You're
so
welcome.
We're continuing the conversation of mm-hmm. grief, and we're going to get to the place so parents know we're going to frame it around like warning signs, what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing for leaders, you know, the context of the time leaders spend with parents and what, you know, their students, you know, dwindles in comparison. You know,
right.
Leaders spend maybe a couple hours a week. Parents, you know, you're up to like, you know, 30 or more hours of just hangout time, being around each other time.
Right.
So how we frame it will be different. But I want you to set it up for us.
Okay.
So that we're kind of all on the same page of where you're looking so that we can frame, you know, the rest of the conversation. So kind of set us up for how we're going to look at the talk today.
Okay. So, you know, we're talking about grief. So we're talking about loss, losing loved ones, grieving, the loss of a relationship, friends, family. I mean, you can kind of put them in that general bucket. And I think within that bucket, we also have what we would call normal grief, which is a process of losing someone because everyone dies. And so we have this sense that this is a part of one of the rhythms of life is that we lose relationships through death. But then there's complex grief, and complex grief really comes in when there's an untimely death or where there's a death that's unexpected. And so I think we're going to talk a little bit about that today in the life of a teen, someone in junior high. And so I want to give an analogy to start out with. I'm a surfer. This is something we do on the East Coast and the West Coast, right? So we have waves, right? And oftentimes people talk about grief that comes in waves. And that's in the experiential part of it. That often is how it comes. It ebbs and flows, right? And so if we think about how waves work, there are waves that are driven by the wind, right, that we get swells from, and we can see those on the beach, and that's normal. And then there are waves which are produced by seismic shifts. So that's like the Earth's crust, the deepest part of the Earth is shifting, and it produces waves. And we call them tidal waves, we call them tsunamis, right? But there are these devastating shifts that happen that create effect in our lives. And so the ebb and flow of those. The reason I'm saying is that it grief is something that has to be, is a normal part of life. It comes from different places. Some places are, you know, more rhythmic and kind of within the flow of what we would call normal life. And then there's some that are deep that have devastating effects. And so the goal then is to, in both of those situations, is to how do we ride out grief? Like how do we become buoyant in grief? And so we'll talk about what are the signs that we're not being buoyant. Right, or where one of our loved ones we're seeing is we're not being able to keep our head above water, even amongst the swells, so the up and downs of the ebb and flow of the grief. Because we know that grief has to be processed, right? The wave has to come in and it has to crash and it has to sort of dissipate in our lives if we try to interrupt that process, that's where we get into trouble. And so we're going to talk about where the sun is in that.
All right. So let's use me as the example. Yep. I went to college for youth and family ministry. So I studied Bible and teaching and, you know, how to play dodgeball effectively, which there is a strategy to it.
Right.
And you know, how to do a worship service and how to do discipleship, all those things. So I took a couple adolescent development classes. I probably, have taken, and learned a little bit more as I've graduated.
Right.
But let's say I know nothing. So I'm Joe Leader, who is the graphic designer, who is in their 40s, who's volunteering in junior high. I'm the parent, the step parent. So I'm kind of new in this, and this is my first kid in junior high or first kid in high school, and they're experiencing loss. So I want to kind of just give a framework of knowing, maybe just start the difference between those kind of griefs. So like you're talking normal grief, and then the other one was
complex grief.
So normal grief. So let me give you a scenario.
Yeah.
I'm a high school kid. My grandfather is old. Mm-hmm. We know he has cancer. We found out about months ago. We've been riding the process of loss.
Yeah.
And then he finally, passes away.
Mm-hmm.
That is normal or complex?
That would be normal.
Normal. So that we know it's going to happen.
Right.
We've been waiting for it to happen. Okay.
Yeah.
We're a high school kid again. So using high school. Mm-hmm. High school kid, they go to school and the principal, calls the big meeting and assembly, and you notice your teacher's not there, and they announce that the teacher, got in a horrific car accident and passed away, lost their life.
Right.
Normal or complex?
We would call that complex grief.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's the unexpected, that you didn't see it coming.
Right.
All right. Let me use this just to frame it for junior high too. Mm-hmm. So junior high is a time of firsts. Mm-hmm. It's one of the reasons I love junior high.
Mm-hmm.
So the first time they're getting, they're heartbroken, romance. Yeah. I know it's happened to us once or twice. First time they're getting cut from a sports team. So I know in junior high is mom and dad, didn't you pay for the registration fee? And it's just not as easy as that. It's actually talent based in junior high.
Yeah.
It's the first time that sometimes death is felt in the family.
Right.
So the first time a grandparent passes away, the first time a friend may pass away.
Right.
So how much does it add when it is a junior high kid? So, and I just want to make the cut between junior high and high, I think developmentally as they're very, very different.
Yeah.
So it could something that might be normal for a high school kid be more complex for a junior high kid just because of where they are developmentally?
That's a really good question, because you're saying that we could add some complexity because it's a first, even though it's a grandparent, and we wouldn't normally classify that as a complex grief.
Because I think we could both agree that anything that comes out of nowhere is complex. I think you can draw it with that.
Yeah, what I would say is it's definitely traumatic, right? So all death, I think at some level, is trauma, right?
Okay.
It is traumatic to us. Whether even if our grandfather or our grandparent was in the hospital, we knew it, we saw it coming in a sense, there is a level of trauma. And what that means is that something has happened that has now overwhelmed our ability to cope. And that's really what we're talking about today, is coping.
Okay.
How is my student coping? Which means what are the skills that they have, good or bad skills that they've acquired? And that's another important part. We often underestimate, even though it's a first, the acquisition of skills to deal with loss at this age. They have acquired skills to deal with loss, right? So they're going to try to apply those skills to the loss that they're receiving, whether it's complex or it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
And what we will see is that those skills are not adequate for that, because it's a first, or because let's say it's in high school and they never got better skills when they experienced that first loss. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, am I going?
No, you're going the right direction. No, you're in the right direction. So,
The answer is yes, because it's a first, it does add a layer of complexity. And then let's also look at, those skills are already in place. And so we should probably talk about that.
Great. All right. This is perfect.
Yeah.
So we talked last week. We set up, how to have discussions, how to create space for discussions, affirming feelings.
Mm-hmm.
They are angry. They're upset with God. They're angry at the, how this could happen, how this could and we affirm those things. We don't try and give answers or solve problems.
Right.
We listen. We affirm. We create space for conversation. So I want to assume that parents have done that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to assume parents have done that.
Mm-hmm.
So we have created space. We've affirmed. We've listened. That. We've done that.
Yeah.
And this is particularly around then what if we think things are fine?
Mm-hmm.
And we had the conversation, we feel like things are going good. They say they're doing good.
Yeah.
But then, we start to get the sense of maybe things aren't going good.
Mm-hmm.
And we call those warning signs.
Right.
Like, what are the things? What could a parent be looking for? Like, what are some of the things that it, when it falls into those categories of grief, if they're not being dealt with, or if they are unable to cope and use the mechanisms they've learned, they haven't learned the right things. What are the things, how will that express itself in a student's behavior?
Okay, that's where we get into the coping. And I say coping is a good thing. It's a neutral term. So coping could be negative coping. It could be something that's, you know, maybe I'm beginning to eat too much or something like that. So it can go both ways. But what I want to...
I hear that I immediately think, is there positive coping? And I don't know if there's an answer to
that. I mean, that would say, you would say positive or negative coping. Okay. But what, let's look at what, you know, the, going back to the analogy of the swell and the energy behind grief. And the energy behind grief is an emotional energy. At its core. And so what we're trying to do is, how do we regulate the overwhelming emotion that comes from grief? And then we're running through that through what we think about God, how we think about God, how we think about life and death. And so students are doing that. They're running through it through their mental schemes, like about life. Like trying to take this emotion and process it and run it through that. And in the complexity of it is that it comes from a deep level. If it's a first or if it's something that's tragic, you know, all the questions are sort of on the deck anyway, right? Because this is new for them, right? The questions about life, which they're having, which you're well acquainted with being a pastor. And so now all these questions are at the forefront. It's an, you know, you, as an adult, we might call it an existential crisis, right? Along with this, that's what makes it so. And so now, and so it intensifies all the emotions. And so what you want to look for is, first understanding what are the normal rhythms of my kid, right? So he comes home, he eats, you know, has a snack, he's about this much, he engages in these activities, you know, gaming or, you know, studies or whatever, and just understanding the normal rhythms and knowing when they're not happening, when the normal rhythms have been interrupted, and when he's heading into peaks, so peaks of like, he's peaked, he's activated, right? So he's, maybe he's super energetic and, you know, going, running after everything, saying yes to everything, burying himself in activities, or there's a real pit. Like, we're noticing he's disconnected from everything. Like, he was, you know, at band practice the day before, and now he's, like, shut up in his room, and, like, I don't want to deal with the world. So we're looking for peaks and valleys. Like, what are the real, like, intensity, right, that we're noticing? Because that would mean that's usually where they're, a place where they're coping, right? So what are they involved in? The obvious, like, really extremes, you know, are the discharging of emotion through self-harm. I think that's a big one that, you know, kids don't just go there, right? They usually, that's a graded step. So if they've already been in a place of you know, they're struggled with deep emotions in depression or something like that, those kids are more vulnerable to go to some of those extremes. So, and you know, that's, there are a lot of kids that are wrestling with, you know, depression and things. So that's what, so parents who have kids who are already kind of in a vulnerable spot with their mental health is they would need to pay attention to, as their kids move toward the extremes. So self-harm is kind of at an extreme. And then, you know, complete disconnect from everything that they would be at the other extreme. So I'm not going to act out. I'm going to act in and just like kind of disconnect myself from life. You know what I mean? And relationships and anything that I found pleasurable or, you know, fun, including the things that I have to do, like school. You know, I mean, it's just like, that's another extreme. So as you see your kids moving toward kind of acting in or acting out in these peaks, that's where you have to know the rhythms of your kid and know when they're moving out of those rhythms. Now, it doesn't mean just because they decide to not to go to band practice for a couple weeks that, oh no, now they're in danger zone, they're in a pit, or they're, you know, at a peak of activation. It just means that you got to pay attention to it and like watch it almost like on a day, week basis. And sometimes that means doing it through conversation and checking in. And sometimes it just means by giving them their space, but observing.
So I love what you're saying. Because when I think of, you know, when I think of warning signs, I'm thinking, and maybe it's just my mind. I think, well, I'm looking for the outlying thing. I'm looking for that thing. I'm looking for them getting in fights at school or stealing maybe, or, you know, they're lying a little bit, or like I'm looking for the thing that doesn't fit. You're saying, you know, look at what you know does fit. And then because you know what fits, the things that don't fit will just be, will be more obvious. The more you know your kid, the more you know their rhythms, what they do, their normal life, the more you know that, the things that stand out, you don't have to really look for them. They'll just be there. It'll be obvious.
Hopefully they will. Now let me go one cup deeper. This also applies to parents. So parents, how well do you know the way you cope with grief? Because now remember, these are your kids. They've grown up around you in your family system. Even if you're separated from your kids, mother or father, you guys operate as a system, and they pick up the way that you have coped or not coped, or, you know, how it positively or negatively coped with grief. So be on the lookout for what are your tendencies, because we're raising kids, you know, from the day that they're out of the womb, you're seeing stuff in them that's from you. You know what I mean?
Totally. I love
sometimes
it
brings you to your knees and, you know, crying out to God. And sometimes you're like, oh, that's great. I love that, you know, about because they pick up something. But that's the reality, is that they have picked up a lot of things. And so understanding how you respond, and certainly if it's like a family member that's passed, like it's your parent, you're like that your child has lost, understanding, well, how am I coping with it? And then how is my kid mirroring that? Or what of that is my kid picking up? So I think that to me is probably the place I would even start this thing of looking at your kid is looking at yourself and figuring out, okay, what do I see? How am I doing with it? And then maybe having eyes to see that in your kid.
So here's a couple statements I feel are commonly made. A parent would say, so say it's like a loss close to the family. A parent will say, right, I can't worry about my grief right now. I got to be there for my kids.
Mm.
And I feel like that's something that I've heard parents say over my time being a youth pastor.
Yeah.
Or I've heard, well, let's just start with that one. If you hear a parent say that, you know, where do you file that? Like professionally, you look at that, you hear a statement like that. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you react? What do you think?
I understand where that comes from. Like they want to be strong for their child, and there's some truth to that. But I always go back to the analogy of, you know, when we've all ridden in an airplane, right? And the first thing to do is in a case of emergency is get your own oxygen mask on first and then help your kid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because absolutely.
And so it's the same principles. You've got to have self-care in order to set yourself up to really walk your kid through the grief. So, but again, you know, there is a noticeable tension there is, okay, well, how much can I do that, and in what state am I in where I'm now no longer able to help my kid? And that's a real issue that I think most parents intuitively understand is I've got to have some capacity to help them. And so I think that's where the understanding yourself, but then also giving yourself grace and knowing that, especially children of this age and of this generation, they really want to see authenticity, particularly in their authority figures. And so when we fake it, right, and even if it's to help them for their good, they know that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something lost in that for them.
Yeah.
And so it's how do you be transparent in an appropriate way that gives them the right balance of strength and tenderness, but does not just go all strength and, you know, and leave the vulnerable side out of it as you walk through your grief. So that's one of the things that, like, you know, we're going to make mistakes, but those are the guiding principles. It's got to be both strength and tenderness. It's got to be compassion. There's got to be vulnerability and authenticity. But like parents are intuitively wired, I've got to help my kid. And so you have to figure out how to do that in that context. But to go to the extreme and just implode and not be there for your kid, or to power up and show no vulnerability, isn't modeling anything good for them. Because you know, even though they may feel cared for in some sense, they're not seeing, well, what does it look like, right? They may be told that, you're telling them what it looks like, but not seeing it in you.
So, you know, there, just to turn it toward the Bible for a second, you know, being a pastor,
we're pastor,
church, you know, the whole thing, we got it. So, you know, I look at the life of Christ, and I look at a life that does not overreact, does not, I think he totally is the perfect representation of how to live within what you're talking about in the grief. You know, they come to him with Lazarus, his friend's death, and Jesus isn't, I mean, this is one of his closest friends. Jesus isn't losing his mind.
Right.
You know, they're about to take him, you know, to his death, to the cross. Like, that's a pretty serious deal. The guy comes up with the sword, cuts off the dude's ear, and Jesus is like, what are you doing? Like, why are you freaking out? Why are you losing your mind? Like, these big moments that happen where everyone else is just losing it.
Yeah.
You know, he was like steadfast. Like, he like had it together.
And even entered into it from a place of vulnerability and weakness. So the ear was like, you know, Peter's powering up, and Jesus says, no, we power down and enter through weakness, and that's when our strength is revealed.
And like the sisters of Lazarus, like I said, you used even the other one, I mean, they were like in a pit, they were like, all hope is lost,
right?
You know, only if you were here, and they thought it was all over, so like they're like, you know, seem bummed, depressed, very sad.
Right.
And Jesus comes in very calmly and
weeps like, with them.
Yeah. And yeah. and it's yeah. not over, and we're going to carry on together. And right. then the whole thing was great.
Right.
All right. So here's the last piece. If I'm a leader, I'm a volunteer leader, so I don't have as much time with students.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just give a couple examples that I think will be really helpful for a volunteer. Like, so if I'm doing a life group and I notice, you know, a parent emails me, which, you know, if your kid's going through something, you should be able to feel comfortable reaching out to your kid's leader to let them know what's happening so that they can kind of watch and be there and be able to support them and love them and the whole deal. So if I'm a life group leader and I notice a kid of mine is not showing up, you know, some leaders will say, oh, well, it's just a little bit, like, they're just not showing up for, you know, we'll give them a couple weeks. How many weeks would you give it of a kid not showing up or before you, you know, re-engage them, which I think we as staff would say, well, you know, drop them a line, drop them a text, drop them a note.
Sure.
But how long does it go before it's like, all right, well, I think this is a big thing. We should, you know, I should reach out to the staff or really reach out to the parent and really press into this a little deeper than just missing a couple weeks.
Well, I think if you know that there's a situation where a kid is going through some grief, it's known, I would think then you decrease your response time. So or increase the speed of it. So, you know, whereas you might have let him go 2 weeks without calling him or without addressing it, you might let him go one, and then the second week step, you know, in his absence, just check in, you know, is it related or is it just something else? Because I think if it's on the table, then you can expect, okay, we acknowledge this is going on at some level. To what level is it affecting his attendance in the group or his participation?
That's great.
But yeah.
So, and then assuming, you know, things are going well, we're engaging parents, so and things are kind of just going, and as leaders have questions, they ask us, and we're there, their coaches are there for them. So I just want to jump to the furthest extreme for the leaders. If in a life group or some setting, a camp, whatever, and a student who has been going through some stuff, grief, and they share that they are at the extreme that you were talking about, you know, it takes a while to get there, but, you know, they're self-harming, let's say, and, you know, to cope with the grief, the pain of it all.
Yeah.
What is the respect, and which happens, which students share that, and that is a tough thing to hear. Yeah. It is a tough thing to walk through with a student. But if a leader hears that, the heart breaks, obviously,
sure.
and we want to be there for the student, and we don't want to, especially if they haven't told their parents, we don't want to betray the student. We don't want to break relationship, but there's also an expectation that we have as leaders in our church when it comes to a student hurting themselves.
Right.
Speak to that a little bit. How can a leader do that? We've trained them about the three hurts, but you know, it's actually happening. They have to go do it. How would a leader navigate that the right way?
How would they navigate the conversation with the parent?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the safety of the kid is always the first and foremost thing. That's always our guide. Is the kid safe physically, emotionally, you know, spirit? Like, we want to create a safe space. I mean, that's your goal.
Mm-hmm.
You guys do that beautifully. And I think in this situation, you, because of their age and because of their ability to partner with you in the solution, that as you're on your way to the parents, you engage the kid. Say, hey, look, I got to do this. This is for your good because I love you, not because I want to ruin your life or make things more complex for you, but to say, we've now come into something that we've got to tell some people in your life that care about you, that can help you make decisions to get well. Mm-hmm. And that means talking to the right person in their life.
And just to equip it, the student might lose it. I mean, the student might be really,
I
can't believe you're doing this.
Right.
I hate you. I should have never trusted you.
Right.
I should, you know, you told me that I could trust you and now you're betraying me and this is what church is and I don't believe in God anymore. That, you know, all the just terrible things that as a leader will just crush you.
Right.
But that's okay.
That's okay, yeah.
Because that's not coming out of a place of health.
Right.
That's coming out of a place of pain.
Right.
That's unresolved.
And I think when the conversation, when you're done with it, right, so that's what they come with. That's their student's response is the trust has been broken. They feel betrayed. But as your leaders walk the student with them through that feeling, right, which, and they get on the other side of it to say, okay, I know you feel betrayed, but this ultimately is going to be for your good. And we're not going anywhere. Like, we'll be here. Your parents are going to be here. Like, you're safe.
Mm-hmm.
You've been exposed, right? That hurts, but yet you're still safe. They may not get that in the moment, but pretty soon, like, they usually come around to that. Because it's being what it feels like to be caught, right? Caught kind of, something's happened, now been revealed, but I've also feel caught, like I've been embraced, right? Loved as I am.
Yeah, that's good.
That's the essence of, that's where change begins.
All right. So wrapping up, last couple seconds. If I'm a parent listening to this and I know that we need to talk to somebody, get counseling, talk to a counselor to give us, you know, we need more help. What can I do? I go to this church, mm-hmm. go to Mariners. Who can I call? Who can I get leads from or get some support from? Let's assume that they know that they can email any of the junior high staff or the high school staff. But you know, what more from there? What could they do?
Well, they could come and email us, care@marinerschurch.org. They can use the website to do a care request. They could, you know, use my email, jwest, I don't know if that, at marinerschurch.org. Anyone on my team. But we can help provide resources in our community, professional resources, that will help them navigate some of these very difficult, deeper parenting issues.
And by providing resources, we're saying we have stuff ready.
Yes.
The parent's not hearing this saying, oh, well, I feel like I'm the only one. I think usually every parent or leader, they feel like, oh, this kid's they're the only one like this. No, we've planned for this.
Yeah.
We're ready for this.
And we have, you know, everybody's situation is unique, but it's not uncommon. It's not that it's never happened before. And so there are ways to go about it. And we're prepared for that.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. Jack, thanks so much for spending the time with us today. This is so worth it. Parents and leaders, I hope you guys love this. If you have more questions about it, we have answers for you. We want to talk to you. Some of the email addresses and the websites we talked about will be in the comments on the podcast. So check those out. And just thank you guys for pressing into what sometimes is an uncomfortable or uneasy topic, but a necessary topic. If we really want to put loving our students, you know, leaders loving, you know, parents, kids well. Thank you for doing that with us. So like always, TardyCast, don't be late to leadership. We believe in you, our parents and our leaders, to making lives of students great. Have a great day, and we'll see you at church this weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Talk to you later, guys.